Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And today's guest is John Cameron from the Cameron Law Offices. John, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, Tom. Glad to be here.
Good morning, Sam.
John, today we've got a meaty topic to talk about, corporate governance and disputes.
Well, Tom,
sounds scary to me, John.
It sounds pretty high-level stuff, but the reality is corporations do this all day long. They do it on a real informal basis, and you and I have had long discussions about the short-term and the long-term implications of doing it informally and the benefit that you can add to the corporation and the value you can add ultimately when you want to either bring capital into the corporation or sell the corporation.
Well, John, I think we have to go to the 101 course here. Let's start with the basics. In the state of Minnesota, if you're going to incorporate, there's one way to do it or a couple of ways to do it, but the basic way is every corporation is a C corporation. Is that right?
Well, what happens is that when we talk about incorporating, we've talked about this in a prior podcast about new entity formation. You have to decide what's best type of organization for you. A lot of times, you and I work with corporations, and we would go to the Secretary of State and file articles of incorporation. There's other entities you can use to provide yourself with limited liability, such as a limited liability corporation or a limited liability partnership. So, but primarily, you know, the governance, the terms might change a little bit between a corporation and a limited liability company, but kind of the structure and how the responsibilities and the reporting and the recording are fairly similar.
So for all intents and purposes, though, an S-Corp, a C-Corp, they're the same when you're...
Well, in
the statutes for Minnesota?
Generally, what we do is we would file articles of incorporation for a corporation. And the reference to a C-Corp or an S-Corp is really an election with the IRS. It has nothing to do with the Secretary of State on the entity selection. But obviously, there's ramifications if you were, and I know that with Jeff Starbird on a prior podcast, which Jeff goes in depth on the tax ramifications of S and C corporations, if you don't make an S election, you'll default to a C with the IRS. But what we're talking about today is how do we organize a corporation with the Secretary of State?
Mm-hmm.
Those tax issues need to be addressed and a little bit developed more fully in other podcasts, but yes.
And when we get to the corporate governance issues, these issues are the type of things that can prevent unwanted litigation and can help the owners of the corporation prove that they're acting as officers of the corporation and keep any liability for what they've done within the corporation if they are organized properly and act properly from a liability standpoint, right?
That's right, Tom. Let's just stick with a corporation for now.
Okay.
We've talked about this in our new entity formation. We'd file the articles of organization, but then we'd prepare a bunch of other documents that would lay out not only the ownership rights amongst the partners, in, for example, a shareholder agreement, but we'd also have bylaws, which would tell the owners, if I want to call a meeting of the shareholders, how do I do it? If I want to call a meeting of the board, how do I do it? The board just elected me treasurer. What's the role of the treasurer? Well, there's a statutory definition of the treasurer's role, and the bylaws would typically reflect that. They could have been modified, but typically would reflect that. So you could go to the bylaws or the Minnesota statute, and you could look to say, okay, this is what my role should be, and these are the responsibilities. Now, you can get more direction from the board. And maybe we should even back up a second and talk about who reports to whom.
Mm-hmm.
So these bylaws then are defining documents that lay out the rules of the road. for shareholders and for directors. Can you explain the shareholder-director thing?
And I'd add to that to officers as well. Well, the shareholders are the owners of the company, and they're the ones that came together and said, we got this great idea, we need to capitalize it, and we've sat down, we figured out, okay, who's going to put what resources into the corporation, and how much of the corporation are they going to get back for that? And the document that reflects that relationship is a stock certificate. Now, the shareholders may have an agreement amongst themselves. We talked about this as well in other podcasts, buy-sell agreement, and what their obligation is to provide additional capital, what their right is to maybe buy more of the company. That's all at the shareholder level. But those shareholders will get together, and the bylaws will identify a structure for the shareholders to call a meeting and what they can discuss at that meeting and what the notice for that meeting needs to say, and then have a shareholder meeting. Those shareholders, one of the first things they'll do is they'll elect board members.
Now, the shareholders will vote based on their percentage ownership in the company, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And you may, it's a bit beyond the scope of our discussion today, but there you can have non-voting shares as well, and those individuals would not be involved in voting, but let's just generally assume that they're all voting shares, and then your statement is accurate that they would all vote on a pro rata basis based upon their ownership structure.
So then the shareholders would have the original organizational meeting, and then they have annual meetings?
Well, at a minimum, I'd recommend that they have annual meetings. Many corporations, the board might be quarterly or even more often than that to address what is happening. But let's back up again. The shareholder meeting on an annual basis is probably appropriate. I don't know if they would need to meet monthly, but they can meet more often. And there's ability in the bylaws for a shareholder with certain ownership rights to call a meeting more often, a special meeting. And it tells you how to provide the notice and who it needs to go to and how much time do you need to provide everyone the notice. And when you do that, then the meeting can be set and you can have an orderly rules of the road, because people, we're going to talk about this in future podcasts about disputes amongst ownership. Mm-hmm. And the first step is, how do you get everybody together to raise the dispute? And you go to the bylaws, you look there, and it tells you how to get those shareholders in a room.
So we've talked about the shareholders, and they when they have a shareholders meeting, they vote by the percentage of ownership that they own in the company. But at some point, originally probably, they're going to elect some officers and some directors to do the day-to-day business of the company on an ongoing basis, and then the shareholders review that business once a year and ratify what's happened. Is that how that governance issue works?
Well, what would happen is our shareholders would get together and they would appoint a board, and the board oversees the manager or the oversees the corporation on a more regular basis than the shareholders. And then the board appoints or elects officers of the corporation, typically a president, a secretary, treasurer. You might have vice presidents. You can have other officers' positions. And the way this would work is that these officers are responsible for the day-to-day operation of the business. They're there on the front line. They're dealing with customers. They're dealing with receivables, payables, marketing, developing products. And then they're coming. Those officers, that president and other officers, are reporting to the board as to what's happening. So if you look at the shareholders own the company. They appoint the board. The board hires the officers. The officers run the day-to-day operation. But the board needs to be involved and be responsible for overseeing the actions of the officers and would have to approve major decisions. So at each level, there's different authority. You have the officers of the corporation are maybe able to go out and make commitments on behalf of the corporation to buy product and sell it. But the board, maybe there's going to be an acquisition of some real estate or a new plant, and the board would have to take action on that. Now, the shareholders, they would vote on even larger decisions. For example, is the corporation going to sell all its assets? So there's different levels of responsibility at each stage.
So in most companies, small companies, though, the board and the officers, I would assume, are typically the same persons?
That's where it gets a little bit murky, is that
and in
closely held corporations, which we represent a lot of those types of entities, we have a situation where we're sitting in a room with maybe there's four individuals involved, and they're all equal shareholders, they're all on the board, and they're all officers in the company, and beyond that, they're all employees of the company. So they may have duties that go beyond their officers' positions that could be someone else could be just hired to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you get all these different levels of responsibility, and when you're advising them, they need to know that you as a board member, you have these. There's not just additional pay for some of these roles. There's additional responsibility and liability for acting in these capacities.
Okay, let me see if I've got this now. I think I do. You've got the owners of the company, which are shareholders, and when they have a shareholders meeting, they vote their percentage ownership on certain issues. The shareholders elect a board of directors. Say there's five directors. Those directors each have an equal vote, one of five. The board elects the president and the other officers of the company, and at each level, the shareholders authorize the directors and empower them to do business, and the directors authorize and empower the officers to obligate the company to certain things they have to do, such as leases and loans and so forth. So that's kind of the level of, you've got ownership, directors, officers.
That's right, Tom.
Okay. Now, we've done all that, and we've set it in place, and we're 2-3 years down the road, and all kinds of things have happened. We've leased some space, we bought some equipment, we've hired some people, we've done all these things, and now we want to buy some real estate, or maybe we want to buy another little company. And you go out and you say, I want to do these things, and the other side's going to say, who's authorized to do it? And at some point, somebody has to say, where are all of these important events memorialized? And that's at the minute book level, right?
That's right, Tom. You're probably going to get that from a couple different perspectives. One is you most likely will have a lender involved, and a lender is going to want to see, does the president of the corporation, has that person been authorized by the board to take this action?
To bind the company to do these things.
Yes, and as a result, the board will have to have a notice of meeting. And it's possible to just prepare a resolution and avoid the meeting if everyone can sign off on the resolution. But the board will have to resolve to take the action and then also empower that specific officer to execute documents necessary to facilitate the transaction. So that's a kind of a one-off deal where you would see, we're going to go out and buy this asset, we're going to finance it. The lender wants to make sure that you have that in there.
So the lender probably wants to see minutes from the corporate minute book that show the authority to bind the corporation.
Minutes and a resolution.
Okay.
Resolving that. And, what we see a lot of times is there's those are easy ones when there's a bank involved and there's certain protocol that people are going to require. But there's other situations where maybe it's a asset acquisition, but the company has cash and they say, let's just go buy it and we'll just go do this deal. And over time, you do a number of things which are fairly significant but haven't been memorialized or approved by the board over time. And what we find a lot of times is it can be as something on a board level as acquiring assets or getting into other contracts that were never talked about in any board meeting, or they felt they talked about it but they didn't memorialize it. And at the shareholder level, we can have ownership changes that are never reflected in what we refer to as the minute book. And you and I talk about this quite often, trying to get our arms around the minute book to see who owns the company, what action has the board taken, because that should be your first snapshot of where that in the financials of where the corporation is.
Sure, in a perfect world, John, you'd have the annual shareholders meeting, and those minutes are in the minute book, and then you'd have your monthly board meetings, and those minutes are in the minute book, and anything significant, they're in there. But reality is, nobody's probably touched that minute book in 2 or 3 years.
Or longer.
And now something happens, and they have to say, all right, what have we done the last few years, and how do we properly memorialize that in the minute book? You've probably seen how many hundreds of minute books that they're a little bit out of date.
Oh, sure. I just recently did one where someone did an excellent job of identifying who all the owners were. There was some some of the employees became owners, and it was just, you know, all the stock certificates were there, and it was beautiful. But then they decided that, well, they kind of knew what they were doing on their own, and they knew how to figure out how to get the money in the right hands and the right piles. So they just did all that, but they didn't continue down with canceling shares in their minute book, issuing new shares, or having the company redeem those shares. So we ended up with about an 8-year gap of transactions. They were able to tell me, you know, verbally what had occurred, but we needed to go back in and, you know, update the minute book, update the stock certificates.
And get everybody to sign off on that that was involved, I would assume.
And it's good that there was someone there who had the memory for it.
Yeah, and there was no dispute as to what had occurred. Yet they were at a point where they were going to make another significant change in ownership. And in order to get that accomplished, they needed to be able to document where they had been and where they are today.
Goodness, this can all get kind of complicated. But it's something that if you think about it on the way in when you're setting up your corporation and at least talk to the attorney once a year and say, he'll say, what did you do last year? Then you know the type of things that need to be in there. So the more frequently you can update that minute book, the easier this is going to be, isn't it?
Right. I think that, you know, if you work with your attorney to come up with a process where someone internally can maybe, the secretary, for example, can be preparing some minutes for the board so that they can just keep a running log of the things that they've, major contracts they've entered into, you know, maybe asset acquisitions, maybe some decisions concerning employment of officers. These are all things that, it's funny how time gets past us, and all of a sudden we think it was last year something happened, and it was 5 years ago, and then we're all trying to scramble to figure out exactly what had transpired. And while we're comfortable with what happened, and it was all done appropriately, we may be at a stage where we're trying to get financing on something. We may be trying to do a transition of ownership, or we're trying to raise capital. And in order to survive the scrutiny that's required for those types of transactions, someone else, a person, should be able to, without much knowledge of your corporation, pick up that minute book, look to see who is currently an owner, who's previously been an owner, and what the major decisions of that corporation have been.
John, we talked earlier in one of our early podcasts about entity formation, and we went through all of this, and we talked about buy-sell agreements between the shareholders. Now, is a buy-sell agreement a typical type agreement that you would memorialize in the minute book so that it's all part of the permanent record?
Yeah, it would be any type of, you know, in the minute book, you're going to see agreements amongst the shareholders. You're going to see actions by the board. You're going to see the stock, you know, ledger, and maybe some of the stock certificates if they haven't been issued to the shareholders. But yes, it would be a place where you would go to find out all these major agreements amongst the shareholders or agreements that govern the board or the officers.
Now, John, one of the major reasons for creating an entity that we talked about in an earlier podcast was this liability issue. If you're out there doing business on behalf of the corporation, you're an officer of the corporation, an employee of the corporation, that limits the liability to the corporate assets based on what you've explained to us. But it's also important if you're the president or if you're the CFO or an officer of the corporation, if you're signing contracts or documents, pretty important to sign your name and then add your title so that everybody knows that you're acting as that officer of the corporation. Is that correct?
It's true. You can show that you had board authority to do what you were doing, that you were not going beyond your capacity or your authorization in your role as the president or whatever role you're in. And Tom, you hit on one other thing there in that thought, is that when we organize a corporation under the statute, the bare minimum under the statute requires you to file some articles of organization. It doesn't require you to go and prepare a shareholder agreement, bylaws, do these written actions. However, the reason that we do it is not only to make a nice orderly way for the directors and officers and shareholders to manage their relationships in the business, but there's a theory in the law called piercing the corporate veil. And what that is it's an attempt by a creditor, a third party, to sue the corporation, but not be limited by just getting the assets of the corporation. They want to get to the shareholders. And there's multiple theories of how you can try to do this, but one of them, which is to say, you know, you really haven't run yourself like a business. A good example would be is someone has a small retail operation and they all the cash is in the till, but they take some cash out and they pay their personal bills with that money. And then they have other stuff. So when someone comes in, they can see that money was paying all the corporation's bills, but also this person had their personal stuff mingled in here. Well, we call it commingling of funds. But the other example is if you don't have any corporate documents or anything like that, so the less you look like you're running yourself like a business, the stronger the argument is to say you didn't manage this as a business. You can't avail yourself to the limited liability that a corporation is granted under the statute.
You've confused the identity between the corporation and the person, and that leaves you open to some potentially open to some liability.
Right. I mean, piercing the corporate veil has many challenges because the presumption is that you do have the limited liability. However, now you're in a position where, you know, I tell clients, I say, why don't we set it up so that we don't face the argument? So the fact that you're not doing the corporate documents, you're not keeping them updated, now all of a sudden it's a situation where maybe someone has sued under this theory to get to the shareholders, and the shareholder has to sit there and say, we didn't update that, we didn't do that, we didn't do this. So it can create a potential situation where you find yourself, at a minimum, defending an action trying to get to the shareholders.
So what you're saying is if you show some discipline, if you're engaging in corporate acts, if you do it on behalf of the corporation, if you sign your title, if you update your minute book, if you update your shareholders' minutes, if you try to do it with some discipline, then you're really putting any of those arguments way in the back of the bus where, I mean, we've done everything right, we've memorialized everything, you're putting them in a better defensible position, what you're telling me.
You know, that's my goal is to, in advising clients, there's always a point in the conversation when they're asking for advice on an issue, and there'll be that moment in time when the discussion on the facts will turn from absolutely that no claim will arise. I said, now you realize that now we're talking about defending a claim. There's a process where you try to set things up where no claim arises, and then once you've turned the conversation to how do we defend a claim, you can successfully defend it, but the cost is significantly higher.
I have a question. It's, I think, in the same realm as the liabilities, but say you've got five shareholders, 20% each. They're all voting their share, and four of them are officers, or four of them are board members. Are they all five of those liable then? I mean, on a secured loan, for example, if there's personal securities involved, what are the kind of liabilities to those shareholders?
Well, typically the shareholders' liability to the corporation would be limited to the amount that they have agreed to contribute to the corporation.
Or otherwise personally guaranteed, I would assume.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, that personal guarantee.
Well, just related to their stock ownership, it should be limited. It is limited, absent some piercing the corporate veil theory, to what they've contractually agreed to contribute as capital to the corporation. If there is a transaction which arises with a lender that says, "Okay, we'll loan this company money, mm-hmm. but we want the principals of the corporation to guarantee it,"
right?
Typically, the bank starts out saying, "We want you to, you know, let's say we're going to borrow $1 million. There's five shareholders. What they would say is that we want you to guarantee 100% of it, all of you, jointly and severally. And what that means is they can go collect $1 million from one of them or all of them."
Mm-hmm.
What we try to advise clients is why don't you try to get your liability limited to your ownership percentage at a minimum? And if you can't do that as a backup, you should have a cross-indemnification agreement amongst the owners saying that if there is a claim by the bank, that we will, amongst ourselves, will all we'll all be liable to each other for our pro rata share.
Typically, a banker's right. going to go for the deepest pocket and collect all of his money right away.
Right.
So that cross-indemnity agreement just serves to, for the minority shareholders, waive their defense and allow that major shareholder that paid it to get reimbursed on a pro rata share from them.
Right. But it is it's a major issue that's coming up. A lot of clients who did deals recently in the last few years, and especially in the real estate market, both residential and commercial, are finding that, they had partnerships. They all agreed 100% of the guaranteed 100% of the debt, and now they're finding out that, they sure wish they would have gotten some type of limitation in their negotiated in on their guarantee with the bank.
John, we're running down on time a little bit here. So far, we've been talking about the corporate governance with a corporation, shareholders, directors, so forth. When it comes to an LLC or to a partnership, the same things apply, but they have different terms, correct?
Right. Identical. There's the same owners. There's an owner in LLCs. There's a board of governors, not a board of directors, and the officers' positions are identical. And we run into the same issues, and it's the same documentation. It's just that the verbiage that we use with those entities is slightly different. And
so the LLCs, they're members instead of shareholders, and there's a members agreement instead of a buy-sell agreement. Then in a partnership, you've got some partnership agreement, and they're referred to as partners.
Right.
But the same corporate governance issues are basically apply?
Yeah, partnerships are slightly different because they're you don't have that hierarchy. You're basically a partner, and you don't have the limited liability. But yes, generally there's a hierarchy of in partnership. There might be a general partner. There's always a hierarchy of ownership and management, and there may be a couple different levels. And and even with boards, the board can form special committees. There is a hierarchy of organization in all of these.
Any final thoughts and recommendations for our entrepreneurs out there as they're forming corporations and getting started?
Well, as you point out very well in your book, Exit Strategies, that when you form these things, at some point you're going to want to get out of these, you're going to want to maybe sell this thing. You're putting it together. So just think of that. When you get to that point, it's a lot easier to do this on an ongoing basis, not at the end when you want to go and, hey, I got a great idea, I want to do this, because you may create a situation that may either create a lot of work or reduce the amount of compensation you can get for this great business you've put together.
Sure, at the end you have to prove you've done everything properly, and the buyers are going to want to see evidence that it's all been memorialized. So your advice is get organized, get disciplined, and keep it up to date as you go, because it's going to be a lot easier on the other end.
Right.
Well, John, this has been very interesting. I'm about out of time. I'm Tom Lyons, along with my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Georgie Jorgensen. We'd like to thank John Cameron from the Cameron Law Offices for being with us on this segment of todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.